is the Angry GM, and this is another proofread aloud. And like the last proofread aloud, this one is not going to be followed by a supplemental Q&A. Unfortunately, I've been a little strapped for time, and I've been a little under the weather, and I'm stuck in desperate catch-up mode following all the write-up and playtest stuff for Slapdash Alpha. So the supplemental Q&As are on hold for another week or two while I get caught up. But nonetheless, you still get to enjoy a proofread aloud, and the proofread aloud of this article is entitled, like the article itself, The Declare, Determine, Describe Cycle. This article is part of my year-long True Game Mastery series. You don't have to read the lessons in order, but it's best if you do. So, if you're new to this site, check out the series roadmap and start at the start. And then there's a link. This is just going to be a standard disclaimer I'm going to include in all the True Game Mastery articles now going forward. And now we can go to the true rambling introduction. And these rambling introductions, I can no longer call them long rambling introductions because they're just not that long anymore. Welcome back, True Game Master trainee. Unless you're exceptionally dim, in which case get lost, this series is for game masters, not players. Unless you're dumb, you've probably noticed all the true game mastery lessons to this point are about learning new habits and zealously, hard-headedly implementing them. Unless you're dumb, you've probably noticed all the true game mastery lessons to this point are about learning new habits and zealously, hard-headedly implementing them until they become rote. The zealous hard-headedness is particularly important because that's what makes new habits stick. Once you've ingrained the habits so you follow them even when you don't, you can lighten up. Fortunately, there's more to this series than habit building through hard-headed repetition. Unfortunately, there isn't today, so settle in for more hard-headed, rigorous habit building. Enjoy! Heading: Maintaining Flow Through Adjudication. So far, I've focused a lot on your game's pace and flow, and that's because true game masters, like me, know that pace and flow are everything. Pacing is the single biggest thing that keeps players engaged, involved, and above all, invested. Seriously. Now that you know how to keep your players from breaking your game's pace the minute you hand off control, by properly inviting the player to act, I'm going to show you how to keep that pace up when you're forced to work with your players, or sometimes if you're lucky, without them, to figure out how their actions play out. Action adjudication, as you should know, is the game mastering art of determining the outcomes of the player's character's actions. Everything you do that ain't narrating is adjudicating. And that's a problem, because action adjudication is basically pulling a frigging drag show. Okay. That's a very different kind of game mastering performance, isn't it? It's like pulling a drag chute, not a drag show. Because action adjudication is basically pulling a friggin' drag chute. It'll bleed off all the pace, flow, and momentum you build through narration. Subheading: Game Rules, Necessary Speed Bumps. Role-playing games need rules. Notice I said rules where I usually say mechanics. That's important. There's this finger and thumb issue here where all rules are mechanics, but not all mechanics are rules, and GMs always bork that up, and that causes problems. But that ain't the topic of today's lesson, so don't think too hard about it. Games need rules. Without them, they're not games. They're activities, or experiences, or collaborative storytelling bullshit. And if that's what you're after, fine, go do that. But you ain't a game master if you ain't mastering a game, and this site is for game masters, not collaborative storytelling bullshit artists. Anyway, game feels everything, right? The game's got to feel right. Combat's got to feel fast, exciting, and chaotic. Interactions have got to feel smooth and natural. Well, every time you break out the dice, you're hitting a big old pause button on the game's action. the narrative action, to do a bunch of math and paperwork. Piss and moan all you want about how the rules demand you run combat as a slow-ass chess game, but if your combat feels that way, that's on you. My combats feel fast and exciting, and I run freaking D&D 3.5. The point is, tabletop role-playing games are half narrative and half gameplay. When it comes to narrative, pacing is what separates good narratives from crappy ones. But mechanical gameplay, using the rules, is to pacing what a crowbar is to a kneecap. Thus, your job as a true game master is to keep the mechanical gameplay to a minimum so it doesn't wreck your game feel. I warned you these lessons would have a bunch of paradoxical backward-sounding crap, didn't I? Yes, gameplay ruins game feel. Subheading. The Translator Game Master. True game masters keep the game's rules locked up in a Chinese room where they can't ruin the game, which leads to the game master acting as something like a translator. It's like this. Your job, when it comes to action adjudication, is to translate the player's character's actions into game mechanics. Then you feed that translation into the game's rules, if necessary, and get a game mechanical outcome. Finally, you translate that game mechanical outcome into narrative narration. Let's have a sidebar, though. And this sidebar is called game speak and world speak. True game masters understand that tabletop role-playing games play out in two different languages. Worldspeak is narrative language. It describes the world and the characters and everything happening. Everything you'd see on the screen if the game were a movie. Gamespeak is the gameplay language. It's all about dice and standard actions and skill checks and attribute modifiers and advantage and all that other crap defined in the rule books. The rules are necessary, and so is gamespeak, but gamespeak is terrible for pace, flow, immersion, and investment. You can't avoid game speak completely, but that's the ideal. More importantly, though, you should never tolerate any naked game speak outside the Chinese room the rules are locked in. What's naked game speak? It's game speak that isn't paired with world speak. You need to succeed at a DC 15 athletics check is naked game speak. Instead, say, the masonry wall doesn't have a lot of handholds. It's a difficult climb and the DC is 15. A few terms exist in both languages. Spell names, for example. Fireball is a game speak term for a spell effect, but it's also a world speak name for a magical in-world thing wizards can talk about. Context is everything. Heading. Declare, determine, describe. So, how do you keep action adjudication from wrecking your narrative pace? How do you do that translator crap and keep the rules locked in a Chinese room? What even is a Chinese room? You do it by building good methodical habits and rigorously applying them. This shouldn't be a surprise because that's my answer to everything lately. And don't worry about that Chinese room thing. I call this methodical habit the declare, determine, describe cycle. And I fully admit, this one's going to slow your game down for a while. But remember, speed and pacing ain't the same thing, and a smooth flow is better than a fast flow. And eventually, the speed will pick up. The DDD cycle starts when you're done inviting the principal player to act, and they've taken the invitation. In other words, it starts with a player declaring an action. That's what the first D is all about. After the player's properly declared an action, and getting there is the hardest part of all this crap, you, the true game master, determine the outcome. Then you describe the outcome. And once you get these habits down cold, you'll seamlessly move from describing the outcome to inviting the principal player to act in response. Do this right, and I'll show you how, and you'll minimize contact with your game's rules and keep your momentum through action adjudication. To use a totally dumbass contrived metaphor, You'll be a dolphin. You'll arrow majestically through the water at breakneck speed, then leap briefly into the air for a big gulp of oxygen, and then lance back down into the water perfectly and keep on swimming. Yeah, I know how stupid that sounds, but people love a good analogy. Subheading. Declaring actions. I need a little sip. I just noticed there's a little problem with my headings, but that's okay. Subheading. Declaring actions. The declare, determine, describe cycle starts when the principal player declares an action. That is, a player tells you what their character is trying to accomplish and how. And unfortunately, players are idiots and they'll mess up the whole DDD cycle before it even starts by doing this wrong every single time. How? They'll break one or all of the three rules of action declaration. Rule number one, be complete. When declaring actions, players must tell you what their character is trying to accomplish and how they're trying to accomplish it. And they've got to tell you anything and everything relevant to that action. What tools they're using, what resources they're spending, and so on. If the action is an attack, the player must tell you what weapon they're using. If the action is a negotiation, the player must tell you their character's tone of voice and what facts and evidence they're using to make their case. Players leave a lot of crap out, and crappy game executors and complacent true game masters let them get away with it. But not you. Not anymore. Rule number two, be concise. You know what? I'm going to boldface these headings. Because I'm down to like heading level four for this now. And heading level four, and they are not looking good. But what can you do? Rule number two, be concise. While players often drop important details from their action declarations, like weapons and tone, they sure as hell love to include lots of flowery prose, and they love to jump ahead to describing the outcome. Blame Mike Mercer all you want, kid, but this ain't new. We were making fun of true thespians in the pages of Dragon Magazine before anyone had ever heard of Mike Mercer or YouTube. A little description is a perfectly fine thing. I ain't knocking it. But declaring an action is about stating an intent to attempt. It can't be described until it's resolved. Characters don't stab ogres or convince guards. They attack ogres and appeal to guards. More importantly, true game masters use everything the players say to determine their action's outcomes. Attacking an orc with a longsword is different from stabbing an orc in the head. When a player says, "I stab the orc in the head," they're telling me they're deliberately aiming for a headshot instead of taking a center of mass attack to an undefended line, which is far more likely to hit. And I, as the truest of true game masters, resolve those actions differently. Your job's to translate actions into game mechanics. When players bog their actions down with flowery prose and extraneous crap, it screws up the translation. Now a sidebar, which I call first and third person. There's a lot of online yammering about players speaking in character versus speaking about character, especially in the talky-talky bits of the game. True game masters know it doesn't matter for crap whether players speak in the first or third person, even in social interaction scenes. And true game masters never reward or require one over the other. A player's only job is to tell you what their character is trying to do and how. Any action, even an expiring speech. An expiring speech is the last speech you give, right? Oh, those are your final words. As I go, pass on this prophecy to... Sorry, anyway. A player's only job is to tell you what their character is trying to do and how. any action, even an inspiring speech, can be declared with a couple of third-person sentences, and there are zero good reasons to expect a player to improvise the entire speech. Speaking in character is the equivalent of describing an attack in excessive, flowery detail. There's no more reason to describe every single word of speech than there is to describe every feint, jab, and lunge that constitutes an attack. And one of the reasons I told you to speak to the players about their characters is to show your players they don't have to speak as their characters, which is something a great many players find hard to grok and see as an obstacle to participating in social interaction scenes. So, for the sake of comfort and inclusion, drop any dumbass bias you've got toward in-character speech. Rule number three, don't cite rules. It's a player's job to tell you what their character is trying to do and how. Characters, and the things they do, are part of the game's world. Thus, players should not, and cannot be allowed to, declare actions in game mechanical terms. It ain't just wrong, it's limiting. And letting players do it teaches them the rules are more than just tools the GM uses to resolve certain actions. Lots of modern games make it nigh impossible for players to declare actions without invoking rules, and that really frosts my ass. But you can't stop chasing an ideal just because it's unattainable. True game masters work to ensure no game mechanical term ever crosses the player's lips, and they get as close as they can. Subheading: Running the Error Checker. Players suck at declaring actions, partly because they're dumb as rocks, and partly because they've been trained by other idiotic game executors or online personalities. The problem is your doctrine of personal game ownership prevents you from handing your players a memo, as if they'd read it anyway. What good are rules you can't show the players? Well, they're there so you can train your players. And this is the first part of your methodical declare, determine, describe habit. When a player violates a rule, force them to fix the problem before you go any further. You're attacking? With what? Your teeth? Your bare fists? Hey, when you said stab the orc in the head, were you asking for a cold shot penalty or were you just being overly prosaic? Look, Arcana is a skill, not an action. I'll decide what skills to roll when. Tell me what information you're after so I can decide what rolls are needed. You need to be a hard ass here, every time. I know it'll slow your game down to train your players, and you'll get a lot of backtalk and a lot of pissing and moaning. True game masters take a lot of crap, but that's the price of running great games. Speaking of true game mastery, subheading, posting warnings. As a game master, it's your job to tell the players everything their characters see, hear, perceive, and know about the game's world. So if a player declares an action that's impossible or ludicrously dangerous or risks some cost or consequence, it's your duty, not job, duty, to make sure the player knows that. Just to choose one totally random example that pisses me off to no end every time I see a GM bork this up. If a player declares an action that will provoke an opportunity attack, like moving through a threatened area, it's a true game master's duty to warn that player. Every time. True GMs never spring surprises on players that reasonable characters should have foreseen. And now, a sidebar. The benefit of the doubt. Lots of GMs complain about opportunity attacks and square counting crap. Those same GMs force their players to pick their paths carefully, position spells just right, and measure everything to the inch. If a player screws up, they get whacked or their friends get fireballed. What fun, huh? True game masters assume the characters take the most reasonable and smartest path to whatever end the player has declared. My players don't have to move their minis on the grid. They can say, I want to close with that orc and attack with my longsword. If there's a path to the orc, they take it. If there are several, they take the safest. And if there's no path, I say, your character will have to move past either the ogre or the direwolf and risk an attack. Is that okay? Which path does he take? In short, I give my players the benefit of the doubt whenever there's any ambiguity. Thus they, and though I'm using moving on the grid as an example, I ain't speaking strictly about movement or even about combat. I mean the shortest path to the end in the figurative sense, safest path, most reasonable paths. Let's say, most reasonable path to the end as in the figurative sense. In short, I give my players the benefit of the doubt whenever there's any ambiguity in anything. Thus, they trust me to help them with their actions. Instead of 10 minutes of measuring, Beth just says, is there a way to blast those three orcs with burning hands without hitting Ardric? And I say, yes, from there. Or, no, but you can get two of them from here. That's the best you can do. Subheading, confirming actions. After a player's declared an action, and after you've error-checked and posted warnings, it's your duty as a true game master to repeat back the action as you've understood it and ask the player to confirm you've got it right. Until you do so, you cannot and must not proceed. Simply put, if you can't restate an action such that the player agrees to it, you don't understand the action they've declared, and you can't resolve what you don't understand. Fortunately, this is simple to do. Just start with, so, your character intends, and then finish with the action, following all the rules yourself. So, Ardric intends to run forward and attack the orc with his longsword, even though it will expose him to an attack from the ogre with the spear. So, Beryllia intends to step forward and cast Burning Hands such that it envelops these two goblins. So, Cabe intends to beg the guard to let him go, using the guard's sick daughter and a lie about Cabe's sick mother to play for sympathy. So, Danae intends to stop the critically injured Cabe from dying of his injuries with the supplies in her healer's kit. Okay. Stop the unconscious Cabe. Yeah, let's do that. So, Danae intends to stop the unconscious Cabe from dying of his injuries with the supplies in her healer's kit. Or using the supplies in her healer's kit. Okay. Intends to apply first aid. Danae intends to apply first aid to stop the unconscious Cabe from dying of his injuries using the supplies in her healer's kit? It's that simple. Well, it's simple when you practice it enough to internalize it as a habit. That's what I always mean when I say it's that simple. Anyway, let's have a sidebar, which I call active listening, which I should call active reflective listening. If you have ever taken a course in communication or conflict resolution, worked on communication with a therapist, read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, listened to one of Jordan Peterson's talks on effective communication, or watched certain Charisma on Command videos, you probably recognize the repeat back the action for assent thing as a form of active listening known as reflective listening. I ain't gonna explain active or reflective listening today. You can and should research it on your own. But I am going to revisit it in the fall when I tell you how to resolve conflicts at the table as part of managing an ongoing campaign. Active listening is an essential conflict resolution tool. Hell, it's a vital communication skill. To keep campaigns going with actual social humans, true game masters must master human communication and conflict resolution instead of relying on the delusional belief that bullshit feel-good techniques like X cards, trigger warnings, and session zero limit setting actually do any good. So look forward to that, and meanwhile, dump that useless crap where it belongs. Subheading: Determining Outcomes. I'll bet that seemed like a hell of a lot to take in. It was. But don't worry, that's pretty much the meat of the lesson. Determining the outcome is way less involved. That ain't to say it's easy. Determining outcomes is what separates true game masters from crappy game executors. But it's more down to mentality than any particular habit or technique. Crappy game executors follow the pre-programmed game code in the rule books, and when they run into trouble, they go crying to Jeremy Crawford on Twitter. True game masters, meanwhile, remember the game's rules are tools they can use to resolve in-game actions, but they're not required to use anything other than their own brains. And they must use their brains first, and the rules second. This is where the basic rules of action adjudication I taught you years ago and republished in my book come in. With a declared action in hand, or in brain, you decide whether it can succeed, whether it can fail, what success and failure mean, and whether there's a risk or cost or consequence to consider. Then you decide if you need the rules to pick between the outcomes. If you're here, you can handle this part. That said, the next lesson in this course is all about using the game's rules and the game's dice like a true game master. And meanwhile, one more sidebar. When you must use the rules, use them raw. True game masters rely on their brains first and use the rules as tools as needed. But true game masters also know it's important to use the rules often and to use them as written, even if they're shitty rules. How's that for a hot take? The game's rules, as they're written where the players can see them, create a sense of a consistent, fair-feeling game. And dice rolling gives players a feeling of agency and self-determination, even control. Yeah, it's an illusion, but the whole game's an illusion. Meanwhile, a true game master can run a great game with any shitty system. So the illusion the rules present is way more important than the rules themselves. True game masters don't use rules when they aren't needed, but they do hew as close as possible to the rules as written when they do use them. And if a true game master truly thinks the rules are too shitty to use, they change game systems. That's a way better use of a true game master's time than hacking a system. I hate D&D 5e. It's full of shitty rules. But when I run D&D 5e, I run it mostly by the book. Subheading: Describing the Outcome. With a game mechanical outcome in hand, in brain, all you have to do to finish the declare, determine, describe cycle is to describe the outcome. Obviously. Declare, determine, describe cycle is the most obvious name I've ever given anything. Describing the outcome's simply a matter of translating the game mechanical outcome into narration. And you already know how to do it. Because it's as simple, with practice, as repeating back the action you already repeated as if it had happened as intended, or didn't. Ardric runs forward, avoiding the ogre's spear thrust, and wounds the orc with his longsword, dealing 7 points of damage. Cabe begs the guard for mercy, spinning a sob story about his sick mother, but the guard sees through the lie and cracks Cabe on the head with his cudgel for 8 damage, knocking him out. He's dying. Sure, you can dress that crap up with flowery flourishes and descriptive prose, and you should once you're used to the process, but most players won't blink if you don't. The fact is, most GMs don't mess this crap up by narrating badly, they mess it up by skipping it entirely. This, okay, that's a hit for 7 damage. is not description. That's crap. If you want to be a true game master, build the habit of translating outcomes into narration, even if only by rote repetition of the action as an outcome instead of an attempt. Heading: practicing your rhythm game. The crap I've been teaching you, narrating by visualizing, inviting the principal player to act, and now following the declare, determine, describe cycle, is all about rhythm. Narrate, invite, declare, determine, describe, invite, declare, determine, describe, invite, declare, determine, describe, transition, narrate, invite, declare, determine, describe. Each of those things is a verse in a song, or a musical chord. Get each one down cold, and you can play them in any order and create amazing music. The habits I've taught you, breathing before speaking, speaking to players, about characters, error-checking actions, and all the rest, that's me teaching you the right finger placement to play the chords. While you're focusing on your finger placement, your songs will be slow and methodical. To you, they'll sound clumsy, forced, and stilted. But your players will still think they sound better than whatever crap you've been playing so far. I promise. The point is to focus on your fundamentals. Don't try to dress up your games with flowery prose and descriptive flair. Instead, go through the steps. Every time, in order, correctly. So narrate. First breathe, then speak. Then invite the principal player to act. Remember to speak to players about their characters, and always speak directly to the principal player. Then declare, determine, and describe. Error check actions for completeness, conciseness, and rules not mentioningness. Post warnings. Repeat back the action for assent. Use your brain to determine the action or determine to use the rules. And repeat back the action as an outcome. Make a damn checklist on a sticky note and keep it in your eyeline as you run games if you have to. And work through the checklist every time. It'll all feel natural sooner than you think. And then you can add style and flair. In short, practice your fundamentals before you start showing off. And by the way, I'm just going to mention in closing, at the end of the article, there is actually a nicely enumerated little checklist of that stuff I rattled off. So check that out. Feel free to put that on an index card or a sticky note and have it ready as you practice all this shit for narration and action adjudication. And that's it for this proofread aloud. I'll have another one out in a few days, and then another one a few days after that. Though the last article this month may not lend itself to a proofread aloud. You might have to live without it. But I'll figure that out as I get there. Anyway, have a good one, y'all. See you again soon. Or talk to you again soon. Whatever. You'll hear me again soon.